Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. I hope everyone out there is in a really great mood. We have a wonderful guest. I'm going to bring her up. I'm going to introduce her just a bit, and then I'm going to let her tell you about herself, which I find is always much better than me reading. She has a career that is not only helping many, many people, it's also very much enlightening us to what is going on around us as far as our privacy, which is, where is our privacy? Well, our guest, Dr. Catherine Albrecht, she is actually a privacy expert. Catherine holds a doctorate in consumer education from Harvard University, and she is an outspoken opponent of the RFID, implantable microchips. She has been an outspoken person for many, many years now and has been on every show possible. And now she actually has her own radio show. She's a syndicated radio host. She's a best-selling author. And she's a U.S. spokesperson for www.startpage.com, the world's most private search engine. Now, I have used Startpage, and I always feel very comfortable because it's private. I don't know of any other search engine that I feel that way about, so I'm always, always grateful that she put me onto that because I do use Startpage.com. Catherine has authored pro-privacy legislation. She testified before lawmakers around the globe. She's written for numerous publications, including Scientific American, and granted over 2,000 media interviews. She was appointed by New Hampshire Governor John Lynch to serve as an expert member of the state's two-year study commission. And you can find Catherine, which we'll bring this up again, and also today on our show where it explains about the show, I have put these up for you. Her website is www.catherinealbrecht.com, and that's K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E-A-L-B-R-E-C-H-T.com, and underneath that, www.startpage.com, and of course, Facebook and Twitter, and you can find those addresses when you look on the page. So let's bring Catherine up right now so that she can tell you more about herself.
Hey, Joy, I'm so excited to be on your program again. It is wonderful to be back on the air with you and to say hello to your fabulous listeners out there. I know you have some of the best informed listeners probably in the country today, and it's always a joy to come on and give you guys an update.
Thank you. We need an update, Catherine. Things have changed radically, I think, since you were on last, and I would imagine that you've kept up with every tiny little bit that most of us, we don't have time. But we
well, you
want,
know, it's
we
funny, Joy, because I've been doing this since 1999, so I've been at this for, I guess, coming up on 13 years now. And it used to be that I had a couple of websites where I would go and I'd kind of get the day's news and I'd feel like I was up to speed on things. Nowadays, mm-hmm. it is happening. These incursions into our privacy, these technological developments that impact us, are happening at such an enormous rate that I can't keep up. I get probably 150 news stories a day that cross my desk, any one of which, and I do a daily radio program from 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Today I'm airing a rebroadcast so I can visit with you and your guests, but I do a daily radio show, and any one of these 150 news stories that comes across my desk in a typical day would make a full hour of radio. And you and I both know you can only do so much radio. You only have so many hours in a day to speak and write and convey these things, and I would need 150 hours a day. I've only got maybe, you know, 4 or 5 that I can
That's right, Catherine. You can't do it all, but at least you got it started in the right direction.
Yeah.
That's my start page. Now, I would have never in my wildest come across startpage.com, and yet it is private. Is that correct? We can go to that instead of, let's say, Google. Well, maybe, I don't know.
Well,
but anyway.
This is what I love, Joy, because when you start talking about privacy invasion, a lot of people just, I'm sure they just want to tune out. And they just want to change the channel because it feels hopeless. It feels like we're fighting a losing battle, and every day we just get bad news. And I don't like being the bearer of bad news. I don't like being the person out there saying, whoa, you know, it's all over, the end is near. I like to go out there and say, hey, guys, listen, here is some hope. Here's some optimism. Here are some tools. And so I actually helped to develop the start page search engine back when I discovered what Google was up to. And I think this is probably the key thing. If you're using the Internet, and I know that your listeners are all very Internet savvy and very technologically savvy when it comes to using the net, if you're on the Internet, then Google is accessing your information to a degree that I think most people have no idea. And maybe we can unpack that just a little bit and help people understand it so that they can see the value of something like StartPage. So what happens when you go onto a search engine, when you go onto Google, and I'm going to single them out because they account for about 80 to 90% of searches, but there's also Yahoo and there's also Bing, so there are other search engines out there, and they all do the same thing, so I shouldn't just pick on Google, but we'll use Google as an example here. When you go onto Google and you make a search, you think that you've got the door shut, you know, the shades drawn, there's nobody looking over your shoulder, and you have the privacy of your own office or your bedroom or, you know, your wherever it is that you're logging on, and you think that you are making this search privately. Well, nothing could be further from the truth, because when you log on to Google and you search for, you know, bankruptcy information or maybe pregnancy counseling or marriage counseling or drug counseling or, you know, we can all think of hundreds of examples, you know, women who've had miscarriages, who are struggling with grief, who are struggling with, you know, things that are private. They're not things you need to be ashamed of, but they're things that you just don't want to tell the world because it's really nobody's business. And when you log on and you search for those things, Google is sitting in the background going, aha, now we know. You know, as your listeners may know, I just finished my last breast cancer treatment. So for the last 16 months, I've been dealing with breast cancer. And I made a very conscious decision back last year when I was undergoing, you know, the worst part of that, to reveal that to my listening audience and to make that a public fact. But a lot of women don't. And back when I was doing that research, you know, what a horrible thing to think. Thank goodness I could log on to StartPage and do my searching there about breast cancer when I was trying to find out what is this lump and why am I experiencing this and what are my odds of survival? I mean, all these really, really delicate, very sensitive private questions. Had I been entering those searches into Google, Google would have said, aha, well, we know that cancer patients are big spenders. Because nothing makes you more willing to spend money than the thought that you may die. I mean, at that point, your money's not worth much. So they know that certain medical conditions, certain situations and circumstances in your life make you a very free-spending consumer. And so they look for people with cancer. They look for people who are going through divorces. They look for people who are going through these life transitions. And once they find a live one, which, you know, anytime you go on and you search for this stuff, they go, aha, we found one, then they start serving you ads. And you'll find these ads everywhere you go on the Internet. And it's not just an issue of your searches tracking you. It is any website that is running Google AdWords, and you'll see them over on the side. Some people have had this experience. I want to get into Gmail in just a minute and talk about how mail fits into this as well. But you might have the experience of going, that is so weird. Why is there an ad over there for bowling shoes? How do they know that I just joined a bowling league? Like, what in the, you know, what are the chances of that? And then you go to another website, and let's say, you know, it's like the Humane Society website, and then there's an ad for, like, bowling clothes. You're like, what is going on here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the reason that you're seeing those on websites that are totally unrelated, you know, the Humane Society or the car, you know, the car blog, you know,
right,
stuff.
Right.
You're on like the jewelry blog, and all of a sudden there's an ad for, you know, something you typed in a personal email to a friend. You go, how did they know? Well, here's how it works. And so there's three pieces where Google, and I'll use them specifically here, where Google is collecting information about you. And I'll tell you what the three pieces are, and I'll tell you the three ways you can get out of it. So the first one is everything you search for in Google now, as of April 1st, now goes into a database that they maintain on every person in the world who's on the Internet. They have a database with that person's name at the top and all of the things that they can accumulate about that person. And in fact, their big privacy transition back in April of this year was the announcement that, first of all, they made it public, we are going to be doing this. And second of all, they said, all of the Google services that we offer, and there's a ton of them, I mean, they've got Android phones and Google Maps and Google Street View and Google Books and on and on and on. I mean, they've got, you know, dozens of services.
Right.
They said, as of April, everything you do that we can glean information about you from any one of our products, we're going to grab as much as we can, and we're going to put it in that central data entry on you. And so that was a big transition, because prior to that, they had to keep all that stuff separate, and they couldn't intermingle it because their privacy policy said that they would. They changed their privacy policy. They said, as of this moment forward, we're going to keep a centralized database entry on every single person we can. And every single thing that you do where you reveal anything to us, we're going to snag it and we're going to pop it right in there, and we're going to use that information in tons of ways, any way we see fit, essentially. So when you go onto their search engine, anything that you search for is fair game. So that goes into the database. I said that there were three ways they do it. The second way is any website that you land on that is running Google Ads. Now, this is a little bit complicated. It's not super technical, though, so if people can follow me, then this will make sense to you. Let's say that I go to the jewelry blog. All right, I'm just using that as an example. Let's say it's a, you know, clay jewelry blog. And I land on the blog, and on the side, there's a Google ad. What happens is the person running that blog, let's call her Kelly. All right. Kelly's running this beautiful jewelry blog. She's a beautiful jewelry maker. She talks every day about fun stuff. People want to hear it. They go to her website and they log on, and she wants to monetize that. So let's say she has 10,000 people a day visiting her blog. Well, what she can do, and what many, many websites are doing to monetize their traffic, is they contract with Google Ads, and they don't even realize how this works, by the way. I'd say 95% of people don't have any clue that this is what's actually happening. So I don't want to hold it against Kelly because she probably doesn't even know. But she says, hey, you know, I've got 10,000 visitors a day, and if I can run Google Ads and people click on the ads, then I make money. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, it sounds like a good deal. That's how newspapers have worked for years. That's how television works. Advertising is the way that we provide free content. So she then signs a contract with Google Ads, and Google gives her a little piece of software code that she installs on her website. And what that software code does, now she doesn't even really know what it does. All she knows is that's the software that's going to serve up ads for people that visit the site. She washes her hands of it. She gets a monthly check. She doesn't have to think about it again. When you land on her website, here's what happens. That little piece of software on her jewelry blog says, aha, someone has landed on the website. Let's figure out who they are. And then they look into your cookies, because anytime you use a Google service, Google gives you a whole ton of cookies that identify you to Google. And that cookie is the link between your landing on her page and your centralized data file, your dossier, as it were, that Google keeps on you. So when you land there, they say, aha, it's IP address number blah, 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 and cookie number blah, blah, blah. Oh, that's Catherine Albrecht. We've seen her on lots of other blogs as well. Interesting. She has an interest in clay jewelry. Let's add that to our list of information about her. We'll know that on Wednesday, June 13th at 5 in the afternoon, that she landed on this jewelry blog, so we'll know where she was and what she was doing at that time on that date. We'll make a note of that as well. And then we will reach deep into what we know about Catherine's recent activities on the internet, her searches, her emails, and other websites that she's landed on, all of which we've stored in her central dossier. And we will use that to serve what we think is the most relevant ad that she's that's most likely to get her to spend some money. And we'll pop that right into that little Google ad space on that jewelry website, and voila. And then, Joy, when you log on to the very same jewelry website, instantaneously Google engages in the exact same process for you and puts up an ad for something you might be interested in. Now, this is happening because Kelly contracted with Google to run the Google ads. Some people are estimating, I've seen various estimates, that it's anywhere from like 50 to 70% of the web, of the non-corporate websites that are actually engaging in these kinds of data transfers back to Google. So even if you choose not to use the Google search engine, the very fact of landing on websites, if you have a Google cookie in your browser, or if you have in some other way or identifying yourself to Google, is allowing them now to know where you surf, what you're going, you know, what pages you click on Kelly's website. You know, did you go straight to the earrings and go through 10 pages of that, or did you head for the bracelets? And if you went for the earrings, then they'll go, aha, she likes clay jewelry, but mainly earrings. So the next ad we serve her, let's make it an earring ad. Now, when we're talking jewelry, you may say, well, you know, that's okay. Everybody, you know, lots of women wear earrings. Nothing private there, nothing really embarrassing. Right. But when you start to expand this out and think about all the rest of your web surfing, then it becomes very disturbing. So, again, three ways. Number one, the things that you search for through Google. Number two, the websites that you land on that are running Google AdWords that you don't even realize, and the runner of the website doesn't even realize, are funneling all visitor information straight back to the centralized brain there at Google. And then the third way is anyone who has a Gmail account, and I think this is probably the most offensive of the three. If you have a Gmail account, mail is worth about $5 a month. That's about the market value of an email account, a web-based email account. So when Google gives you free Gmail, they're essentially giving you a $5 coupon, you could say, in exchange for which you are allowing them, or they are allowing themselves, to read every email that you send and receive, to take all of the keywords and the concepts and the sentences out of those emails and put them into that central dossier of information they keep on you, to take all of the things, you know, if you write to your doctor and you attach your most recent blood test results, they have given themselves the right to take that attachment, that PDF attached document, and pop it right into their file on you. If you write to your divorce attorney and you know your court date is coming up in 3 weeks, they have granted themselves the right to take that out and put it in a calendar associated with your name. They have given themselves the right through Google Mail, through Gmail, to make a list of all of the people with whom you correspond and look at their interests, and then figure out what kinds of things you're into based on the people that you know. Gee, we noticed that six people she corresponds with happen to spend a lot of time on Harley-Davidson websites. Maybe she's into bikes. So they've granted themselves the ability to do that as well. It is mind-blowing what Google has granted itself the right to do through the privacy policies that we all unwittingly agree to by simply using their so-called free services. So if I were to say to somebody, you know, whenever people start talking about email, they say, oh, but it's free. And I say, well, hang on a second. You know, if I ran a hotel, if I were Hilton, and I said, hey, you want a free room? I got a free room for you. Come on over. It's really nice. We got nice, you know, king-size beds, and the sheets are really beautiful, and, you know, fluffy towels. Come stay in my hotel. There's only one catch. I have outfitted the entire place with listening devices, surveillance cameras. I've got one in the shower. I've got one aimed at the bed. I even have one under the toilet seat aiming upward. It's okay, though, because, you know, I'm going to keep all that information to myself. And, oh, by the way, we bug the phones, and we're listening to all the phone calls, and we have bugs in the walls. And so everything that you say in that hotel room is going to be our property. You would say, no, thank you. I think I'd rather just pay rent.
Yeah.
And yet when Google says, here is a free Gmail account, people go, oh, it's so nice of you to give me free email. Thank you. And we don't even realize the deal that we're making with these companies. So when I said I was going to give you good news, because now everybody's listening going, oh, my gosh, I have Gmail.
Yeah, yeah.
What am I going to do, right?
What do we do?
The good news is that for those three things, I've got a solution for each of the three. The first one is the search engine. When I first found this out, Joy, I wanted to run into the woods and live in a cabin somewhere and never get on the internet again. I was so freaked out when I actually had it sink in what it meant that Google was watching all my searches. I was such an idiot. Here I was, a privacy advocate. I was so stupid up till a couple of years ago. Google, not only did I use Google all the time, but Google was my homepage. And so every single time I logged on the internet, I logged on to Google, and so Google knew every single place I went. I was just feeding them streams and streams of data. I didn't know any better. And here I am, a privacy advocate with a doctorate from Harvard, and I didn't know. So listeners out there, don't feel bad if you didn't know this, because I didn't know it either. And when finally I figured it out, I was like, I can't know this. I can't know this. Let me stick my fingers in my ears and hum. I can't know this because it's going to ruin my life to know this, because then I can't use the internet. So long story short, I found a company over in Europe, a little company that was doing a private search engine, a European private search engine called IxQuick, IxQuick, if people want to check it out. And IxQuick was the private search engine that was returning search engine results without recording anything of what you search for and without making even a record that you'd been on their website. So they delete IP addresses, they delete all the records, they don't know what is searched for, they just give you the results, and that's that. And so I contacted them, and I had them on my radio program, and I should give people my website, by the way. It's kmashow.com. So you can get there at KatherineAlbrecht.com, but nobody can spell it. So I always just say kmashow.com, and that'll redirect you to the website. And my show, by the way, is available in rebroadcast, and it's available through a 24-hour phone listen line, so it doesn't have to conflict with your show. Put it that way.
Great.
People don't listen to it when you should be listening to Joy. Catch me later on the rebroadcast. So kmashow.com. I had the CEO of IxQuick on my show. And I said, you know, talk to me about private search, because I really need an alternative to Google. And so he told me about the company. I fell in love with it. And I said, this is so fantastic. Thank you, thank you. I started working with them, actually, saying, you know, let me be a privacy consultant. Let's figure out how we can privatize more of the internet. And then we came up with the idea of saying, well, heck, if you can't beat them, I'm not going to say join them. I'm going to say find a way that you can kind of get in through the cracks and still do the private thing. And so what we did was we actually contracted with Google, and you're going to like this because it's cool how it works. We contracted with Google to create startpage.com, which is totally ours, doesn't belong to Google. And what we do is we actually pay Google a small amount to run searches that they return the search results to us that are Google results. And then we strip away all the Google garbageola, and we serve it to you clean. So if you go to, yeah, it's really neat. IxQuick is still there. So for people who just hate Google and don't want anything to do with Google and would never even want to see a Google result, you can go to IxQuick, IxQuick.com. But if you're kind of hooked on those Google results, and a lot of people are, then mm-hmm. you can get 100% real Google results through startpage.com that we run, that we created, that when you search for, you know, breast cancer, we take your search, we have our servers, which are located in California and in the Netherlands, we cleanse your search so that there's no information about you at all, no cookies, no browser, no IP address, no nothing. We send a clean search from us to Google, and we say, give us search results on breast cancer. And they give back to us, to StartPage, search results on breast cancer, and we then turn around and hand them to you. And then we delete all records of your visit. In fact, delete isn't even the right word. We never put them in the first place. So every time you land on a website, your IP address, which is kind of like a social security number for your internet connection that can pinpoint your location. You ever seen those ads, Joy, where you'll land on a website and it'll say, a mom just like you in, and then it names your town, you know, lost 35 pounds with this fancy diet. And you're like, how do they know where I am? Well, they know where you are because of your IP address, because that reveals your location. So we strip that off. In fact, when you use StartPage, those ads will say, a mom in Cupertino, California. And you're like, little do they know, I'm in New Hampshire. Ha ha, I love it. Right? So they think that you're us. They think that you're some big computer out in Cupertino, California, which is our server. They don't know who you are. And so once you log on to, and what I was going to say, any website that you land on gets your IP address automatically. I run websites, and automatically I get everybody's IP address. I can't help it because it's built into the software. So it's not just me. It's like millions of websites, every website out there. When you land on a website, the website automatically gets your IP address. And if you want to avoid that, which is what StartPage has done and IxQuick has done, is we've actually written proprietary software that instead of receiving your IP address, just records zeros. So every single person who lands on is 000000000. So we have nothing on you is what I'm trying to say. And what's cool about that is we've never been hacked. We've never been subpoenaed. We've never been asked by governments to turn over any data, probably because they know we don't have any. But if, God forbid, someone were to request information or get onto our servers or, you know, hack into them or who knows what might happen, even if they busted the doors down with guns blazing, and got into the physical hardware of our website, there would be absolutely nothing there for them to get. So that's what I think is so awesome. And, you know, we could have built an internet like that. We could build the whole internet like that if people valued privacy. But there's so much money to be made in watching you, reading your email, looking over your shoulder, tracking everything you do, serving these personalized ads, that there's really no incentive for people to do that unless they're really just philosophically on board with this whole idea of privacy.
So privacy is gone because of money or greed or wanting to sell products. That's
totally.
The main reason. Okay.
Totally. And see what happens, and you know, my work has centered on RFID as well and on other technologies. What happens initially is the technology gets developed by the marketers because they want to make money. And so there's really kind of two big financial motivators that are moving the society forward right now. And one of them is marketers, marketing. And I actually have an undergraduate degree in marketing, so I've watched how the profession has changed over the last 20 years, and not for the better. So you've got these marketers whose sole goal is to figure out how to get you to part with the money in your wallet and give it to them. And they're willing to invest a whole lot of money in finding ways to do that because they make a return on that investment if they're successful. So that drives a lot of technological development. And ever since September 11th, we've got a second factor operating also with huge resources and enormous sums of money, and that is what has been, I suppose, called the military-industrial complex. That is the whole research R&D arm of the military and of law enforcement and FBI and CIA and government agencies, which has an interest because this country is kind of going downhill in a lot of ways, and people are not feeling very confident about their government or the infrastructure. So they've got a big interest in putting into place ways to watch and observe people to ensure that they can control the civilian population and keep people from actually rising up if things get really bad. And so they've got an incentive to develop drones and spyware and all kinds of ways to monitor and target and keep an eye on people. And they do it, of course, in the name of, you know, fighting terrorism. And I'm sure that, you know, Hitler was fighting terrorism because he had all those Jewish terrorists in there who wanted to take him down. I say that very tongue-in-cheek because, you know, one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter, depending on the circumstances. But the whole argument here is that, you know, we've got to stop terrorism. We have to protect national security, which means the security and the interests of those in power. So that also drives enormous sums of money because the people in power have the money and they have an incentive to use that money to very closely monitor, watch, and keep control over all the rest of us. So I think those two things happening side by side, what often happens, the marketers develop the technology first, and then once it's there, then you have the security people coming in and saying, well, now that it's developed, we need access to it. We need to expand it. We need to, and then they begin stepping in and gaining access. Now, this is the reason why I think Google is such an extraordinarily dangerous company right now, because Google has more information on you, me, anybody in this country than has ever been accumulated or amassed by anyone ever in the history of civilization. Google knows more about individual people on this globe than anyone in all of human history. The CIA, the FBI, the IRS, the NSA, the amount of information they have pales in comparison to what Google knows about each and every one of us. So the fact that Google has amassed these dossiers of personal information on us has now become of a tremendous amount of interest to the governments of the world, particularly the oppressive and tyrannical governments of the world, and they now want that low-hanging fruit that Google has put together. So imagine these bulging dossiers of information. Hitler, Stalin, Pol Pot, these guys would have salivated to get their hands on this because if you could get that information, you would know who's politically naive, who's looking up Lady Gaga and Madonna and Britney Spears, or who's looking up the 10th Amendment and the 2nd Amendment and, you know, looking up RFID and trying to understand encryption and, you know, those sorts of things. So they can really gather a very broad view and a very narrow and focused and deep view of each individual in the country. And
now,
China. The best way to understand this is China, because there was a big high-profile case about a year and a half ago where Chinese hackers actually got into Gmail accounts, and they did it very cleverly. They got into the Gmail accounts of Chinese dissidents, people who were criticizing the Chinese government anonymously, and they used those Gmail accounts. They hacked into Google and got a hold of those bulging dossiers of information on the Chinese people and then used it to identify dissidents who were opposing the terrible things going on in the Chinese government so they could round them up and put them into labor camps. So that's the kind of thing, even if Google was your best friend, which I don't believe they are, but even if they were, the very fact that they are collecting this amount of information that is so tempting for bad players to get a hold of and use against good people, to my mind, they at the very least would be accused of being irresponsible by putting those people at risk. And in the worst case scenario, you could accuse them of overtly being evil, because there are now many, many signs that Google is out there engaging in some practices that, frankly, are a little bit questionable. So, you know, this is where I think any thinking person needs to say, do I really want to continue every single day to log into the global brain? And by the way, Google called itself, Sergey and Larry, when they were asked, what do you ultimately want your search engine to become? You know what their answer was? They said,
no.
Like the mind of God.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys want to be the mind of God. They want to know everything about us. And we are participating in it, because what do we do every day if we don't know better? 10, 15 times a day, we walk up to this little machine, which is nothing more than an interface between you and the Google mind of God, and we upload into it, into our little dossier that they keep on us, every thought that we're having. They know what you're having for dinner because you log on to Google and you look up the recipe. They know your doctor's name because you needed his phone number so you could make an appointment. So now they know who your dermatologist is. They know who your hair cutter is because you found that. You logged on to Google and looked up the hair salon so you'd have the phone number. They know everything, everything. And can you imagine if Stalin or Hitler had said to their people, listen, we've got a new technology, and we demand, 1984 style, George Orwell here, that 10 times a day you must walk over and stick your brain into our little interface machine so we can know what you're thinking about. 10 times a day you absolutely have to do it. We're going to record it all. We're going to put it in a database. People would have flipped out. But we do it voluntarily through Google. And here's the thing that kills me, Joy. Not only do we voluntarily go and do that to Google, but we thank them for the privilege.
God, Catherine. And we're innocent with it, though. Most of the people are absolutely ignorant about what we're doing.
Totally. Just have no idea. And, you know, the best way to explain this, whenever people say, well, hang on a second, I love Google. You know, they've got the bright primary colors, and they're just such a friendly company,
they're so cute.
And they're just and they're cool, and they're hip, and they're young, and blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
And they offer so many cool free products. And I say, hang on a second, when was the last time a multinational global corporation gave you billions of dollars worth of products for free? And the answer
Thank
is
you.
Never, because those are not the products. You are the product. And all of that
We're
stuff is just a bait.
So we have never given permission, is what you're saying, for any of this collection. It's been done without our permission.
The way they have structured this is sheer genius. They have said in their privacy policy, which is very clear, you can read all of this. It's all right there, black and white. None of it's hidden. It's right there. They have structured it such that by using their service, you consent to all of their privacy policies. So without even realizing it, you know, you buy a new computer and you fire up Internet Explorer or Firefox, or I guess Internet Explorer now goes to Bing. But most of us, we get a new computer, we go to the library, we go to school, we go to work, and we log onto a computer and we get on the Internet. What's the first thing you see? A big Google screen. And there's a nice little inviting window, and it may as well be blinking saying, tell us what's on your mind so we can record it. You know, just picture it saying that every time you see the Google screen. And so then you type in, and it doesn't dawn on you to go, well, should I read the whole privacy policy? Because the whole world uses Google. So we just go, oh, yeah, Google, you know, Google it. Millions of dollars a day of radio and television announcers giving free advertising to Google every time we use Google as a verb. Google it. You know, we say around here, start page it. You know, I challenge everybody to stop saying Google it, because you're giving this company free advertising. They don't own the search market. They're trying to. But when you log on to Google, you are not, you know, is it that they're doing it secretly? Well, not exactly. You know, I mean, you could read it, you could figure it out, but you are tacitly consenting to this by using their service. And that's the way they get away with it. Same thing with the Gmail. When you sign up for this valuable email that's worth $5 a month, and by the way, that is, I did the calculation, that is less than 1/1000th of the median income, the average person's median income monthly. So you are saving that. That's your savings. $5 a month. $5 a month is what you should be paying for normal email that's private that nobody reads. But for a $5 value, you are agreeing when you get that Gmail account tacitly without even realizing it to allow them to read all of your correspondence. And when they read your correspondence,
like you said, they're not just reading it. They are recording every tiny thing you do, you buy, who you talk to, who your friends are, who your family is. There is nothing about you they don't know. Is that correct, Kevin?
That is correct. And, you know, Google's interesting because if you actually read their own words, they like to boast about how they are becoming essentially the mind of God. You know, I first figured this out, Joy, the moment when I had the oh my gosh attack when I had Google as my homepage. I figured it out because Google had made a bet with the Centers for Disease Control. And I don't remember if I told you this on a previous show, but so they had made a bet with the Centers for Disease Control that they could detect a flu outbreak before the CDC could. And they said, we have more information about the health of the American public than any other single entity on the globe. We know more about the health of the American public than the HMOs. We know more than the doctors. We know more than the Centers for Disease Control. We know more than the National Institutes of Health, and we will prove it. And here's what they did. They created a program that sat in the background of Google, and this is one of probably thousands of programs sitting there right now that we don't even know about because they don't have to tell us. So they created a program that would detect if you had the flu. So if you logged on to Google, they were boasting that based on your searches, they could tell if you had the flu. Presumably because you're searching for things like your company's sick leave policy, maybe the ingredients of Robitussin, maybe a chicken soup recipe, right? So you punch in certain things, and they'd go, bingo, we got one. And then they would use your IP address to pinpoint your location and then put a red dot on a map, on a big map of the U.S., a flu map that they put together. And as they put all these little dots on here based on people's searches, they said to the CDC, here are the places where you're having flu outbreaks. And sure enough, a week later, the CDC said, yep, Google, you beat us to that information by a full week. Amazing. And
now what about the people that say, well, I'm not hiding anything. If I have the flu, well, you know, what does that matter? I have nothing to hide. I'm totally open. I'm not doing anything wrong. What about these people, Kathy? I hear it every single day. I don't have anything to hide. Why shouldn't I let everybody know?
Well, you know, I like to refer to Kim Kardashian whenever this comes up because Kim Kardashian is such an interesting case. I find her fascinating. She's really annoying, but she's fascinating. Kim Kardashian is a person who most of us would look at and say, wow, her line in the sand for privacy is way out there. I mean, she came to fame by, the release of a very intimate, we probably have children listeners, a very intimate tape, videotape of her in which, you know, everything was there on the screen. She has had the cameras in her home. She films all of her conversations with her boyfriends and her siblings and has allowed the cameras into her doctor's office as they examine, splotches on her leg. I mean, this woman tells us everything. So you would say, well, she's a person who says, well, I have nothing to hide. Let the television cameras film every aspect of my life. And yet even Kim Kardashian, when she was going through that divorce from Chris Humphries, she came out and publicly said, hey, listen, guys, I know that I haven't really always drawn that privacy line, but I really want to draw it now. Would you back off and give me some space? And, of course, they did not. And now she's dating Kanye West, and I just saw an interview with her just from this last week where she said, I'm really coming to appreciate the value of privacy for the first time, and I'd really like to have some. So I am really living my life a little bit differently to try to draw the line between what people can know about me and what I'd really like to keep to myself. And I bring that point up, Joy, to say we all have a line. Whenever somebody says, I'm not doing anything wrong, you could watch whatever, what they're really saying is I'm drawing my line in a different place from you. But they have a line. Believe me, I've never met
they
a person.
Do.
I've been doing privacy work for 13 years. I have never met a person who does not have a line. It's just a question of where that line is. And what I really like it to, it's an issue of control. Because privacy is not about privacy. Privacy is about controlling your information. If I want to go on Facebook and post a photograph of the rash on my leg, then I'm in control of putting that out there. But if I go to my doctor privately and I want to keep the rash on my leg to myself and he posts a picture of it up on the internet, then that's uncool. And so that's really where this whole Google thing is an issue. If you want to volunteer, if you've got the flu and you want to log onto a website and tell them that you have the flu and contribute that data to the CDC for public health purposes, be my guest. That's a great thing to do. But if you thought that you were logging on privately to get some private information for yourself and then Google snagged that and identified your location and then handed it over to somebody else, that's not cool because you're not in control and it's your information.
And I think sometimes what I hear is, well, I'm not hiding anything, might be that feeling of powerlessness, like, what can I do? So I might as well just say, well, I'm not hiding anything. I mean, because people are becoming, but then we hear you, Catherine Albrecht, and you are telling us about StartPage that we do have a choice. There is something beyond Google, and we can remain private. And I don't believe many people are aware of that, Catherine, which is why I wanted you on this show. I feel like it is so important that we have a choice, or we even know we have a choice. I know so many people that have not a clue, not even. They think Google is it. There is nothing else. And you know, they've never heard of StartPage.
That was me. That was me. You know, when this really hit me, my first reaction, now you have to bear in mind, I have written a best-selling book on privacy. I have protested outside of Walmart stores with protest signs and picket signs. I have testified before the European Commission and the Federal Trade Commission. Privacy is my life. And
I
when
know.
I found this out about Google, I did not want to go out there and go, oh, Google is so bad, I'll never use it again, because I didn't think I had an alternative. And my reaction, and I'm ashamed to admit this, but I think I have to admit it because your listeners can go, okay, so if it happened to Catherine, then it can maybe happen to us too. My reaction was to say, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to know it. I'm going to keep using Google. Don't tell me that. I don't want to know
Don't tell me. Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me. And, you know, this is what I do for a living. And I didn't want to know. And then finally, after like a couple of weeks of that, I just couldn't live with myself. And I said, all right, let me just take a look. Even if it means I've got to get off the internet and quit my job and never again research anything. It's going to be terrible, but I just have to face it. You know, and at that point when I did, you know, I kind of liken it to finding a lump in your breast. You know, like there's a part of you that goes, I don't want to know. I don't want to look. Don't want to deal, because if it is what I think it is, then I'm going to be in big trouble. But the longer you don't look and you don't deal and you don't do anything about it, the more trouble you get into.
And
so I have look it in the eye, stare it down, take the Google needle out of your arm, because there's an alternative. StartPage.
There is. And that's why. Now, have they contacted you? I'm really curious. Have you been approached in any way, shape, or form by Google, like in any way?
Let me tell you this about Google. Google offers the best search product on the globe. They are so good at what they do. I mean, I will be first to praise Google's technical skills because they're amazing, right? So, you know, I don't mean to just be sitting here bashing Google. I'll be the first to tell you, Google is extraordinary. They offer a fantastic service. It's efficient. It works. It gives you what you're looking for, but there's a trade-off. Now, many people out there will say, well, you know, I'm fully understanding the trade-off, Catherine. I choose to continue using them. And I say, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem. You know, you do what you want to do. The thing I'm trying to do is to say, you need to be informed. And once you're informed, then you make your choice. What I don't like, and see, my degree is in consumer education, and I've kind of viewed my whole career here as being one of educating. I tell you what's going on. You know, I will educate you so you understand the trade-offs. And then you make your own choice. And a lot of people say, I love the idea that Google is going to know more and more about me. Give you an example. All right. Let me get off my Google bashing, and let me just take the complete, let's put on our completely opposite hats of people who love Google. So Google, back in April, when they made this new oneness policy, when all of their services began funneling information into a centralized database of your personal information in one file, all right? Mm-hmm. When they did that, they didn't hide and say, oh, we don't want to tell you. They boasted about it, and they told you why it will be cool, all right? So now put on your Google hat for a minute. And they said, here's an example. You'll have your Android phone, because an Android phone is powered by Google, and it knows where you're located because it has a GPS in it, and it filters the GPS information back to the Google central brain. And you will also have your Google Calendar, and your Google Calendar will say that you have a 3 o'clock appointment across town. This is Google's example, by the way. I'm not making this up. This is them. So you have a 3 o'clock appointment across town. And we will notice, we being Google, helpfully, will notice that the traffic between where we know you're located based on GPS and where you have to be in an hour is such that you're not going to make that appointment. And because we have an app on your phone with which we can communicate with you, we'll give you a little alert. Hey, Catherine, heads up. You've got to be in Boston in an hour, but the traffic between New Hampshire and Boston is completely clogged up on Route 3. Why don't you take Route 495 and call and tell them you're going to be about a half an hour late?
Now, goodness.
So I look at that and I think, no, thank you. I can handle that myself. But Google offers that, and what they said, and here's their quote. They said, people have to do too much heavy lifting these days, and we want to help. We want to help with the heavy lifting. And the heavy lifting is exactly what I talked about, managing your schedule, figuring out where you need to be, figuring out what route to take, figuring out what your calendar looks like, figure blah, blah, blah. So there are people out there, Joy, and I'm not one of them, and I don't think you are either, but there are people out there, and God love them, who say, cool, give me more. I want Google to tell me everything and run my life. In fact, you know one of the things Google wants to work on in the future? It's so interesting reading the interviews with their founders and the people at the top. They've got the wildest ideas. They've actually talked, I kid you not, about a brain implant that would predict what you were thinking about or searching for or about to search for or thinking about wanting to search for, and they would give you the answer before you even ask the question.
Interesting. And they just want to put a little implant in your brain.
At some future point, they said, wouldn't it be cool if Google had a direct interface with your brain so that all that heavy lifting of having to actually get out a device and use a keyboard and look at a screen and type into a window and blah, 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 blah to get the answer, we could just bypass all of that and just give you the answer? You just think about it.
Catherine.
I know.
Is it right? And of course, what is the dark side? I mean, that is, wow, you know, we wouldn't have to think. We would just let them do the thing. But on the other hand, let's see now. Who could they give that information to that we might not be safe with? There are just a few places that we wouldn't want all of this going.
Just one or two, baby.
But we just don't go that far. And people tell me, well, you know, everything's free on Facebook, da, da, da. You know, Catherine, I don't think anything is free on the internet.
I know.
I don't.
I know. I know. It's, you know. Now, let me give you one more piece of good news. I said I was going to give you solutions for these three different things. So the first solution is for your search.
Okay.
Stop searching with Google, please. Now, here's the good news on Google, on Google search. If you stop searching with them for 9 months, that's how long they actively maintain your search data, then you'll drop off of their radar screen. And so I liken it to having a baby. You know, if you can hold out for 9 months, then something good happens. If you can hold out for 9 months and simply not go to Google at all as a search engine, regularly clear your cookies and clear your cache. That's something you do within your browser, within your Internet Explorer, Firefox, Apache, whatever you're using. You want to regularly clear your cookies and not go on to the www.google.com website or books.google.com or maps.google.com. And if you have to land on a Google website, as soon as you get there, don't log in. Stop logging into any Google services. So, you know, don't have anything you have to log into. That includes YouTube,
okay,
by the way. And clear your cookies every time you land on a Google website. If you do that, you will drop off of their radar screen, and they won't have that active information about you. Now, there's two ways StartPage makes this really easy for you to do this. If you go to www.startpage.com, right on the home page, it'll say add StartPage to your browser and make StartPage your home page. And you can click on those links, and it will make it, you know, in the upper right-hand corner of your browser, there's a little Google window.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can
sure.
change that to start page by just following the instructions at the home page on start page. So if you follow the add start page to your browser, it'll tell you how to make it so that up in that corner, instead of being Google, it'll be start page. And then
start
you can
page.
Make start page your home page so it's the first thing you see every time you log on. And that'll help you kind of break the cycle, you know, sort of get out of the habit. And then the other thing is stop saying Google this or Google that. You need to start saying start page it. I'm going to start page
it.
The city of you know, Guanajuato or whatever it is.
Right,
so
right.
Now, in the fall, we are going to be coming out with a private alternative to Gmail, which will be a web-based mail program that has all of the privacy of the StartPage search engine. So what that's going to mean is that, and it's not going to be free, it's going to actually, you're going to have to actually pay that $5 a month, just like you'd have to pay for the hotel room that's not going to spy on you.
Mm-hmm.
So for $5 a month, it is an email program just like Gmail, but better, that is fully encrypted. We not only will not read your email, we won't be able to read it or couldn't read it if we tried, because you have to decrypt it. So it has an encryption key, and you are in charge of that. And that's awesome, because what it means is that if somebody were to, you know, once again, get a hold of our hardware, they wouldn't be able to read it. It'd just be gobbledygook because it would be encrypted. So all of the email that you send and receive would be encrypted, meaning that the you know, AT&T or Verizon or the NSA can't read it and eavesdrop on it, which we know, by the way, the NSA installed a listening portal in the AT&T offices up in San Francisco and listened to millions of people's emails and read them by just sniffing them off of AT&T's connection. So that will not be possible with the StartPage email. If another cool thing is when you delete the email, it will actually be gone forever. That's not the case now with Gmail, Yahoo, any of the free email services that people use. When you delete an email, all you do, and this is really disturbing, all you do is delete your ability to see it.
Huh.
But you don't delete it from their server. It's there forever.
Even
so
after
is,
9 months?
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, they keep email forever.
They keep it forever.
So, you know, you think that delete means gone. It actually doesn't in the world of email. But for our service, it will be that when you delete it, it's gone. And,
it's gone.
You know, totally private. And I'm super excited about it. And I am.
Well, you know, Catherine, we're almost out of time. But I want to tell everyone that let's give everybody your website and www.startpage.com, which I'm going to as soon as I hang up, and go ahead and give your website.
Yeah, it's kmashow.com, kmashow.com. I have a daily radio show. And let me give out, if I could, I've got a 24-hour listener line. So if people want to call on the phone, they can listen to the most recent broadcast. It repeats in a two-hour loop for 24 hours till the next show replaces it. And that phone number is 760-569-7703, 760-569-7703. And my email address is kma@spychips.com. That's the name of that best-selling book I told you about. KM is in Mary A at spychips, spychips.com. And then one final thing I want to say is if people are interested in helping us beta test the email for free when it comes out at the end of the year, they can log on to startpage.com, go over to, click in into the website. So click on where it says start page so you get into the website. You'll see a menu bar on the left, and where it says contact us, click that, and there's a little web form. And if you put in there, please add me to the beta, B-E-T-A, beta email test list, then we'll get back to you and we'll make sure to put you on the announcement list. So when the email comes out, you'll get a free trial period to kind of kick the tires and let us know what you think. And we'll make sure that you're one of the first people to get an opportunity to see the start page email in action.
Well, Catherine, we are so happy that you absolutely came back to talk to us, because I could listen to you every day. I know there are so many that could. We put our heads in the sand and say, well, so what? It is kind of like it's very, very important what we're learning with Catherine. And I would encourage everyone to find her radio show and listen to the archives. There's too much that we are pretending we don't know, but I think most of us know something is up. And
you
kind
of feel it.
So
you feel it in your bones, I know, but there is hope, and I wouldn't be true to my beliefs if I didn't also say that a big part of that hope is a spiritual hope. And so it's, you know, we can't put all our trust in the technology. We also have to put a lot of that trust in God, because that's really ultimately where the truth is.
Thank you, Catherine, and you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you, Joy. It's such a delight to be on your show. God bless you and all your listeners.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.